Firstly, I'd like to say a very great thank you to Chen Lu for organising this session, and a particular thanks to the S5 division of the Soil Science Society of America for the invitation to speak at this meeting and to invite me over, which is a very interesting thing. And I've been struck this morning by a series of talks which have had humans in the landscape but doing science, as opposed to humans in the landscape working that landscape in a means of propagating their livelihoods in some way. So this piece of work that I'm going to describe and illustrate is actually located around a desire to communicate something of soil science, of life in extreme environments, and how people who are otherwise marginalized, who work in those extreme environments, could be understood. And I need to give this a little bit of background. I myself am a soil scientist. I come from that tradition. And more correctly, I suppose, these days, I consider myself to be doing things which are rooted deep in history and have a social dimension. And I'm very pleased to see a fellow geoarchaeologist in the audience this morning. And the project that's been developed is really an outreach or extension project, not an extension in the sense of communicating how to do your farming better, but an outreach project to try and encourage people, and actually very difficult to reach, opinion-forming audiences, about how we can understand these extreme environments. And the history of this goes back a few years. I was awarded a very prestigious fellowship a few years back, which had a very specific remit embedded within it, which was to do this kind of outreach. Other fellows of that type, some of them have done very simple things like running a masterclass or something like that. Well, in addition to doing those kind of things, I've collaborated with a very good friend of mine, Michael, from Goldsmiths in London. And he is not a composer in a conventional sense. He is somebody who uses data sets in an integrative way, in much the same way as we as scientists do. And I was struck by the sheer sort of funneling of data sets that's drawn into a lot of the science that's been on display this morning. And that's very much what I think most of us do. But in this particular context, we have a common interface between what we get up to. In order to base this study or this understanding, I need to introduce a few topics. So I'm going to talk a little bit about cultural soils and what do we actually mean by that. Then I'm going to talk about the actual communication and give this as an example. And I must say that the invitation to come here was to bring this as an example. So we have an actual exhibit to take place in a few minutes. And then something about the futures, how we take this forward. Now, this work was funded initially by Research Councils UK and some other funders, as well as with various galleries. And we started with some of the work that I've done in West Africa, and we based this, and it's been to a variety of high status sites or galleries around the world. We started big with the National Museum of Scotland, and we've been to various other locations, both in the UK and internationally, such as in Prague. And here's a picture of me and Michael at the NMS. But to understand where we're starting from with this, we need to break it down and say, what are we trying to achieve? Well, we're trying to achieve some sort of communication of soils-derived knowledge to an audience which isn't expecting to understand anything about those soils. This is not a diorama. It's not a sort of, please look at this, this is interesting kind of museum display. This is very much an immersive kind of thing. And we'll, hopefully you'll experience this and get that impression in a few minutes. With respect of cultural soils, what we're trying to do is understand past societies and the land management associated with them. And in doing so, and a key artifact of what we do is to try to communicate that soil itself is a cultural record of past human activities. I shouldn't really have to mention that here in a soils conference, but it is still considered by many archaeologists to be something that is covering their precious artifacts, whereas the soil itself is an artifact. And the installation exposure is based in a field site. Fans joke that I overwork at World Heritage Sites. This is at Bratterhilth, which is in the modern day small village of Kasiarsuk in Greenland. And Bratterhilth is the site of first settlement of Greenland by Eric the Red and his followers just over one millennium ago. And we were very privileged to be able to re-excavate this site, and we can see some of the stones that are not being disturbed in the far background. They relate to the actual extant site as it remains today, and is visited by lots of cruise ships and so on as a heritage site. But if we just drop into this profile that's in front of us, we see soils at the base here, which are a cultural layer. And the image on this screen is a little bit of a blue cast compared to the one that I see here. But within this, we've got the original land surface of that period. And we're able to take that material away and to process that to try to get some sort of relationship between what was going on in this landscape and how people may have responded to changes in the environment. So typically we would take these materials and we would process them to the point where we have a thin section, a soil thin section, which is used to understand something of the material artifacts, the debris that's been left by this societal incursion into this landscape. And in doing so, we often generate very large data sets, and typically, and in the example that we use in this particular installation, we have in the order of about 70,000 data points. Now, we can statistically process that and write a paper about this relationship at this point. Yes, that's one way we could do this. But what we were trying to achieve with this was to use those soil thin sections and the images and the data sets from that image analysis in order to do something very different. And that was to create an installation which could be displayed in a gallery or in a museum, or indeed in a conference setting maybe, which is spatially related in the sense that we are looking at the soil thin section and we relate it spatially to whatever image we're looking at. We somehow convey something of that image. We need something that is temporal in the sense that we have a great time depth of 1,000 years in this case, and something which is culturally related. And some of those cultural effects that we see in southern Greenland are the occupation of the landscape on an ephemeral basis by early Inuit people. We see the Norse settlement. We see the very progressive settlement phase. We then see the reflective phase of the Norse. We then see what's become a bit of a trope, the collapse of society in this location, or the migration away perhaps. And then we see an empty phase followed by modern Greenlandic settlement, with modern Greenlanders forming farming communities in this landscape. Another set of data sets that are being drawn together are evidences from climatic histories of the region, and we're drawing this down from data sets, and it's very important to us that we actually have strong integrity of these data sets. From the GIST2 ice core, for instance, and we're able to look at the extremities of the winter climate, and we can start to map particularly in the 13th and 14th century AD, issues relating to the degradation of the environmental conditions, the stronger winters, or the more extreme cyclings within those winters. Added to give this installation some sort of resonance with an audience which, as I've said, is coming cold to it, just as yourselves are in many ways, is to have some other voices and some other instrumental items within this. So we have in situ recordings, environmental recordings taken in the field whilst I was doing other field work, as well as modern recordings of old Icelandic speakers, modern day old Icelandic speakers, making recitals of either songs or poetry in the original Old Icelandic. So our setting is in the area which is on the fringe of the ice cap, and we see the ice cap just on the edge of this image. But we have just below the cloud bank is the ice cap here, and we see a variety of settings which people have lived in. And we're sat on the top of a small hill here looking at a sheiling. This is a hill farm which the Norse settlers would have drawn their animals to. And we're talking about an economy of dairy economy at this one point in time, which is the Norse settlement. And we start to see elements of that Norse activity being reflected in their poetry and in their other activities of the time. So the introduction of an economy which was completely alien to this landscape leaves a massive cultural change, leaves a massive environmental change, which is reflected in the soils that we see. Now I'm going to play this installation for a few moments, in a second, and what we want to do is to reflect on this, and in doing so, I hope that we'll be able to discern that we see something of the early Inuit, the Viking period, Norse farming, unpopulated and modern, and all the while we're building through a series of systems of granulating our data set, building the idea that we can link the visual, the soil thin section, to the sound. And what we're doing at this point is we're making a series of granular syntheses, and we're taking a sound event triggered by a discrete soil particle, which may have a cultural signifier to it, and then that extends. So we're able to take an initial sound grain, and we can extract that, filter that, maybe change that or reorder it, and combine this to create different sound textures. So we move from our data sets towards this installation in a manner which is essentially a stochastic exploration of the soil data set. And normally we would play this not as a recording, as we do today, but as a live performance, if you will, by a computer. So we have a computer performing and cyclically going through our data set, never repeating, because it's a stochastic exploration which is driving through this history. Now, the other issue about this kind of exploration of data sets is that it would be very straightforward if we had a very discrete functional role that could be somehow expressed in sound, but that's very difficult. So we have to ascribe that. So we are making ideas whereby we parameterize our data, such we take the color hue of an object maybe, or the area of an object, and relate this to something about the composition. This develops a narrative, and this narrative is not a rational narrative in the sense that we're not trying to build something which is mimetic or mimicking what we see on the screen, but we're able to do this. And we see on this particular diagram, if I just wave the mouse around as instructed, it's here, we're taking the science which is encapsulated here and drawing this in different ways into the installation, which is summarized in the bottom part of this figure. So we have a series of sound libraries, these environmental recordings. We have the ice core data, and then we see a stochastic element being brought in, and we see two outputs. So the narrative that's woven, or we hope is woven at this point, is not particularly rational in the sense that we're not trying to directly link behaviour to a particular proxy of that data, but instead, so it's not mimicking, it's not mimetic in that way. Instead, we're trying to create a series of oblique references to these data. The reason for doing so is that we want to maintain a structure which is syntactically sound, so we link these cultural events to different things that are occurring in the installation, and hopefully make this comprehensible. So, as requested, I've brought with me the facilities to actually display this installation. And a lot of time and trouble was put in by the organisers, the people, the tech people here, who have flown in from places like Cincinnati and so on, to make this work. So let's just get this to play. Thank you. So, with the installation as it is, what we've been able to do is bring about an idea where we take a theoretical construct of taking data streams and creating some audiovisual reference towards an audience that has perhaps not experienced this before and has not drawn an understanding of global environmental change, change in cold environments, change in the interface that we see between modern day societies and that of the environment. So we have a series of steps that we can take this work forward with. One of which is that the installation itself is an exploration of data and is taking forward ideas about data processing at a fairly fundamental level. And on the lower left-hand edge of this image, we have sets of data variables being fed into this set of objects which are creating, this is one part of the code that's been created in order to produce the installation as you've just experienced an extract of it. So by taking these data sets forward, we have a possibility that we can bring about some sort of change in our understanding of other very complicated data sets. And I'm always reminded of this when we start to look at ideas about data integrity and understandings of such data. And one of the things that we're presently exploring is the possibility of live data processing using the computer models that we've built, or computer code, sorry, that we've written, in order to understand data sets and to try and spot anomalies which are perhaps not otherwise there. So in doing so, we reduce the mimicry, that reduce the mimetic relationship here. More importantly, perhaps, is to draw the understanding of the environment towards new audiences. And this exhibition, exposure, has been taken to different locations and has been supported by contextual materials. It's not every day that you get professional museums and musicians looking at sort of thin sections and trying to relate that to the understandings of this environment. And these exhibitions have been visited by a vast number of people. So, as a synthetic way or a method of synthesizing a cultural understanding of the environments in which many of us work, this is perhaps a way forward. It's also a possibility to draw some understanding of the environmental extreme itself. If I played that installation to minute 13 on that particular recording, it would start to touch boundary conditions that we had issued and start to behave in a slightly different way. But since we're short of time, I've cut it short. So it touches on some sort of boundary parameters in its own way. And in trying to create an identity for a region or to actually emphasize how life has gone on in a particular region, we have a means now, perhaps, of communicating that to an audience which was otherwise very difficult to reach. Very typically, and we see it here in this conference, outreach audiences are either the technical or a school children. The very difficult to reach audiences are older children visiting as teenagers on their own to an exhibition and to adults. And if those adults are coming from important policy making or other informing professions, then perhaps it's our duty to actually touch out an outreach to these people in a way which is not yet another paper, but is something else. The other issue that we've come across in pursuing this work is that we've been able to find ways of problematizing data sets. And in doing so, we might be able to create a means of overcoming particular discipline boundaries. And we may be able to, in doing so, overcome some of the entrenched epistemology that we have within different domains, different subject domains. This remains to be seen, and as an ongoing project, we're reviewing how different audiences react to this topic, how different people respond to the ideas that we've expressed in the installation itself. So I'd be very interested in chatting to people in a relaxed setting after maybe some formal questions. Thank you.